That's where things stand locally in terms of politics. We are joined now by Gene Bolduc, the host of the Weekend Water Cooler here on WCHL, to talk about everything else. How are you?
Talk about everything else.
Or we can talk about local politics, too.
I love that Orange Politics does this at Tyler's.
It's really
because
cool, yeah.
I just get the picture of this lineup of all these people who are running for office at the bar saying, bring another, what have I done? What have I done? So let me tell you what you've done, folks. You have offered your for public service. God bless you. I hope that you have a wonderful, wonderful race. You may be surprised to find that you make friends with whoever wins if you don't win yourself.
Yes.
I've been on the losing end of a campaign. I ran for the school board in Orange County in 1994 when the chances of a liberal getting elected were about the same as being struck by lightning.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt like I was struck by lightning after I didn't win, I have to admit, but it was a tough year for liberal folks. And really, there was a very nice article in the paper after it was all over with where one of the individuals who won said nice things about me.
That's
probably
good.
Just to be magnanimous. But what he said was that he thought that I was these are the kinds of things that when they're said about you, you never forget them.
Yeah.
He said that he thought that I was the boogeyman from the left, but it turned out that we had a lot more in common than he thought.
Yeah.
Which is, we have really almost everything in common because we cared about kids. We wanted the schools to be great. And, you know, the school board is supposed to be a nonpartisan election. And really, the things that separated us were about political philosophy, which don't really apply generally to running the schools.
It can sometimes come into play when it comes to local politics. But honestly, we've talked about this before, and I've said it, even with regard to, like, the General Assembly, for instance, which, you know, we talk about how polarized North Carolina is and people on the far left and the far right, and everyone thinks that the other side is evil, and yet you actually look at the bills that get passed, the vast majority of them are bipartisan, passed with huge majorities, get signed by the governor. We always talk about the contentious ones that get vetoed, but there's so many that we don't talk
about.
Because
we're in the news business, not in the so what business.
And the same thing with, like, the Supreme Court, as polarized as it is. We got that 5-4 split, and Gorsuch is going to move the country all the way to the right. Most Supreme Court rulings are either unanimous or close to it.
Are close to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, people would be shocked probably at the volume of cases that the Supreme Court handles.
200 cases
a year,
thereabouts.
Most of them very esoteric and having to do with land rights and very difficult, complicated things to do with the Constitution that most of us would never understand or frankly care about.
Yeah, I will say,
but we're glad they do.
The fact that Blake Koch and I were discovering this on the air when I mentioned about the mayor's race in Carrboro being the first contested one in many a year, and then one or the other of us had the thought about Hillsborough, like, how long has it been since there was a contested race for mayor of Hillsborough? And we just started digging on the air, and it goes all the way back to 2005 was the last one. So props to Cindy Talisman for running for mayor, because she's the first one to challenge the incumbent in 12 years. But think about 2005, how much has happened in the last 12 years. Just locally, 2005 was also the year that Pam Heminger won a race for school board.
Right.
She then went on to be county commissioner,
oh,
lost for re-election, won mayorship, and that's just the Pam Heminger story.
Like how much has happened. Political life has happened subsequently.
It's incredible.
That's amazing. Amazing.
So we're going to see that.
I'm really glad that folks are running. I'm glad that the races will be contested. I'm glad that there'll be a nice marketplace of ideas for that that help drive the town in developing good policy. Any town, you know, in play here, and I know everybody will, you know, run great races and stay on the issues, because when you're really running things locally, you know, you should do it that way.
Yeah, definitely.
You should run a good race and talk about the issues.
Yep. Speaking with Gene Bolduc, host of the Weekend Water Cooler. So that's the state of local government. What else are we talking about? Do you think Sean Spicer is having a great day or a terrible day today?
I think he's having, I think he must feel like he just lost 20 pounds overnight. I think Sean Spicer, who has just handed over the reins to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who was appointed his replacement, from the podium today, which I got to see, which is a nice, refreshing change.
Oh, good. Yeah, they filmed it.
It was an on-camera press conference today. I think he's relieved, whether he even completely fathoms yet how he's relieved. I think his whoever's treating him for high blood pressure, which he almost certainly has, is going to be happy with his numbers in the coming weeks.
Press secretary is such a thankless job, especially when you're the press secretary for a politician like Donald Trump, who is in the spotlight, under fire, unpopular, promoting unpopular things, whether or not you think it's the right thing to do, certainly unpopular, and getting a lot of hard questions. You're the person who's out there in front of the press taking all of that heat, but you're also not the one who's responsible for making any of those decisions.
Right.
So you're out there taking the heat for what someone else is doing.
And then, if you will, go with me down this fantasy lane.
Definitely.
Work in your mind the picture of Sean Spicer at the podium standing on a rug with his boss gripping the edges, ready to yank it out from under him every time he speaks.
Yes.
This is just an impossible and unsustainable model for running a press operation.
Mm-hmm.
What's been happening at the White House, it's my opinion, shared by many, I think, at least according to my Twitter feed, that now is the time for the press to say, listen, if there's no more on-camera briefings, we're not going to cover the briefing because we're not getting much from you anyway.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
We should at least be able to show you on camera in your 13-minute briefing that we're not getting anything from you.
Yeah.
And these are our cameras. This is our job. This is the People's House. There's no reason to not carry this live. They're not only not allowing them to carry it on camera, but not live. They have to go through the whole thing, embargo it, and then release it. There's no reason for that.
Yeah.
You're not briefing the press on, you know, the position of our troops in a war zone or something that has to be carefully managed and edited and embargoed or whatever. There's no reason for it.
Yeah. Although I will say that the press is getting one thing from the White House in their decision not to allow the broadcast of the briefings. They're getting ratings. They are getting ratings. Like, they're getting a spike in viewership and airplay and probably advertising sales as well.
Yeah.
And in a world where,
because that's kind of the state of war.
In a world where the news is thought of as a for-profit business, ratings is what they seek more than anything else.
Well, that's unfortunately true. But I do think that the network should collude a little bit on this, and they should refuse to cover for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And you know, then we'll see if
and that line
value
in the sand would generate conflict, which would generate ratings.
Yeah, who's
so
not in favor of this, right?
Them.
Have them all standing out on the White House lawn with their arms crossed saying, no, we're not going to do it. And then they can read the Twitter feed. I mean, to have to cover that, and what you're covering is a person standing at the podium saying the president's tweet speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
What are you losing, really, if you decide not to put a camera on that? So here's the other thing. The new guy, what's his name?
Anthony. I blinked and missed it. I was too busy refreshing the page for local elections.
Anthony,
communications director, right?
Scaramucci. You can't make up these names. Anthony Scaramucci.
Oh, God, that's not going to last. CNN's already got a headline saying Scaramucci apologizes for insulting Trump. I'm not even going to click
goodness
on it to find out.
Don't
probably
even click on that. Don't even look
day
at that.
Yeah, no,
here's my quote
no
from the presser earlier today where he announced, where he appears as the new communications director. After, by the way, it was on Wikipedia.
Yes.
This is how personnel decisions are announced.
Yeah.
Here's my favorite quote. I'm not going to speak on behalf of the president.
Okay.
Just let that wash over you, that the new communications director just said, I'm not going to speak for the president.
You know what? I'm fine with that, because so far the criticism that has come of the White House is that Trump is requiring people who should not be speaking for the president to speak for the president. So the fact that Scaramucci is declaring some degree of independence is, I think, a step in the right direction.
Yeah,
it's a little odd for the communications director, but I think that's fine.
It's a little bit off for that. Yeah, it's a little tough for that job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the dominoes are going to begin falling. You know, I feel very sure that Mueller has the president's tax returns already.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that by the time you and I speak next, that he's going to try at least once to fire Robert Mueller.
Maybe.
We'll make that little bet.
I'm not holding my breath on the dominoes, because we always say the dominoes are going to start to fall, and either they have been, and it's just a really long string of dominoes, or they haven't started to fall yet.
It's a lot of dominoes.
Yeah,
it's
I think it might be a lot of dominoes, but either way, like, I'm not seeing the last one yet. So
yeah, well, that's that part I agree with.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's hard to know which one. The important thing to watch, as we've discussed before, is where's the tipping point for Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, and when do they jump ship? And when that happens is when it starts hurting them.
Right.
That's clearly true.
Yeah.
So we'll see what the funders want to do. It's all about the money in that
and this
party.
And this gets back to the question we were talking before we started about the story that came out. Was it Washington Post this week said that that Trump is asking around to see if he can pardon himself.
Right.
And I, like, honestly, constitutionally, the Constitution doesn't say anything about that. So I think the answer to that question for the Constitution's purpose is yes. Does it not?
The Constitution says that the president has the power to pardon.
Right.
Except where it's related to impeachment.
Oh, right. But
so,
the president can pardon for criminal activity, but
correct.
He can't prevent people from being impeached by using the pardon
that's
power.
Correct.
I think that's
including
true.
Himself.
Yeah. Right.
That's
right.
Correct.
That's true.
And
but that gets
because,
back to the question.
Because one is, as I've said too many times already, one is a legal process.
And the other is
and
political.
And the other is political.
So
right.
The fact that it all comes down to McConnell and Ryan.
It comes down to impeachment.
It comes down to politics, though.
Right.
It
and
very
absolutely
much
comes
down
to politics.
Politics. Yeah.
And, you know, there's a, I guess there was a great quote from a George Will column from 1973.
Mm.
This is just breathtaking to me, where he said, you know, the Nixon problem is a Republican problem now.
Yeah.
This is with Democrats in Congress owning the majority in Congress, and he said, the problem with Nixon, this is a Republican problem now. This is a party that the Republican, this is a thing that, a problem that the Republican Party has to take care of if they want to have integrity as a party.
Yes.
And he said last night that, you know, he feels the same way.
The same way. Charles Krauthammer is saying similar. The other sort
I'm sure
of
that's
intellectual
right.
pundit on,
yeah, and,
on cable
and I
news.
Mean,
yeah.
You know, they, it's nice as a columnist, I didn't get to do this very much, but it's nice as a columnist when you can go cut and paste about 80% of something you already wrote and then drop it back in and say,
I'm pretty sure
as I
most
said,
columnists
as I said
do
40
that,
years
though.
Ago, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And have, you know, change two names or something and it's exactly the same point.
You can pretty much tell when you know who the columnist is and what it is they're writing about.
See, wait,
pretty much what they're going to say most of the time.
Didn't he say this last July 4th?
Yeah. But I will say, and this has to be, I got to get to the end of this, so this will be my last point, that we talk about, and there's all this sort of hyperbole in the media always about, oh, this is the end of the Democratic Party, or oh, this is the end of the Republican Party.
Right.
Hillary Clinton lost by 50,000 votes. It's the end of the Democratic Party.
And
or
the world.
Trump is, and the Republican Party is going to fall apart. Neither party is going to fall apart, almost certainly. Like the impeachment of, or the near impeachment of Nixon and his resignation in 74 really hurt the Republican Party for two election cycles.
Right.
By 1978, it was back where it was,
right.
And then 1980, they won a sweeping victory. 2004, and we're talking about 2005 being forever ago in local politics with a contested race in Hillsborough. 2004, George Bush wins re-election, and you had Karl Rove saying, well, we're going to have a permanent majority for the next generation. 2 years later, there's a huge Republican sweep in Congress, and then Barack Obama gets elected in 2008, followed 2 years later after all of the stories about the death of the Republican Party by the Tea Party sweep in 2010.
Right.
So the pendulum swings.
And was it not on election night that Karl Rove is like, no, we can still win this. You
right.
Know, don't
well, that was 2012.
Don't call
I think
the
it
race.
Was.
Don't
yeah.
call the race. So
yeah.
I don't think he's quite the visionary that I'd be looking to in analyzing.
But none of us are. Like, except
right.
insofar as the pendulum will swing back and forth, and whatever happens
right.
in the next year
right.
is not going to have it's going to have an impact on what the Republican Party is.
Right.
I don't think it's going to have a huge impact on how many elections they win.
I can't begin to guess about winning elections, but I can tell you, I think that the GOP is going to recede for some years as a national force from a philosophical standpoint. I think if you asked a whole lot of people in the GOP base, what's the main thing that you believe in as a Republican?
Yeah.
And they would say they would believe that Democrats should not be in power.
What is the main thing that Democrats believe in?
I think Democrats believe that the government in total is there to help people, that it's not the enemy.
Okay.
And that the government is where people can come together and do good, largely philosophically. And if Republicans really tell you that they believe in smaller government and limited government and these constraints, if you can find a Trump supporter who's going to have those words come out of their mouth, I'll buy you lunch.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to find that.
I think I can find.
You think you
can
find a Trump supporter who's going to cite those principles?
Who says limited government? Yeah. Where do you want to go to lunch?
And then has a next sentence?
Yeah.
What does limited government mean to you? Well, it means they keep their hands off my Social Security.
Taxes.
I want low taxes,
right,
and free health insurance and everything that my president promised me.
Okay.
This is the problem that lies ahead for our president.
All right. We got to wrap up. Who's on the weekend water cooler?
The weekend water cooler? This week we have a wonderful encore performance of our conversation, very on point, with Brenda Stevens.
Nice.
The Orange County School Board. And we talked about, at the kickoff of the program, we talked about Tom Friedman's book, Thank You for Being Late, talking about the value of putting down the digital device and just talking to people one-on-one and having good human relationships and how important that is, and that our society that pendulum needs to swing back. We all need to be a little bit less connected and a little more connected.
I like it.
Okay.
All right. And Brenda Stevens had some great things to say at the school board meeting earlier this week, Wednesday, I think it was.
Very interesting. It's never dull at the Orange County Schools.
Absolutely.
But, you know, they're struggling with a real problem. And
yes.
I admire that they are trying to be truthful and frank and saying things that hurt sometimes. And, you know, that takes guts and good on them.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're getting to it.
Absolutely. Check out the weekend water cooler this weekend. Gene Bolduc, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron.